Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:34 p.m. the Pacific Standard Time, and today is November 19th. We're seeing a lot of headlines right now about Hong Kong and also about the impact, the knock-on effect, I think is probably the best way to think about it, from the negative interest rates and negative yields that we're seeing in Europe in particular. I thought, though, I'd kick off and look at the MSCI Emerging Markets Index, because it has tracked Hong Kong and particularly Tencent for much of the last few years, but it is currently outperforming. It's back above the trend mean. It has now pushed on to exceed the peak put in back here in July, and it is steadying from above the trend mean. When we look at what Tencent is doing, it's been the largest constituent in the emerging markets index, and it was also in positive territory in here today. It's been up in a pretty dynamic manner over the course of the last two sessions, so it's pushed on to a new recovery high over the course of the last 6 weeks. It still has some work to do in order to push back above the trend mean, but at least this is more positive than we've seen in a while. Certainly it's rising faster than it's been falling. That's been true since approximately the beginning of September, although the size of the moves has certainly moderated over the last couple of weeks. Tencent has been impacted by, I think, one is market saturation, but the other is the antipathy that's been expressed by the central government towards computer games, towards marketing, towards the way that some of the social aspects of gaming have been targeted by the central government, because they're very aware of the potential for these social gaming arenas to be a potential source of dissent. That kind of antipathy then that's been expressed against Tencent has weighed on the share. The fact that it is starting to steady now, that is quite positive. Now, when we then look at the Hang Seng, well, I am rather tempted to think, oh well, that Baron de Rothschild has been right again, buy when there's blood on the streets, except that the Hang Seng, when we look at its constituents, is pretty much a mainland stock market index now. AIA Group is the largest constituent. HSBC, of course, is a global company, but then you've got Tencent, China Construction Bank, Ping An, ICBC, China Mobile, all of those shares together represent almost 50% of the index. What it also helps to highlight is just how much of an influence the mainland has on Hong Kong already. Now, the protests continue. That's despite the winding down of at least one of the protests at the Polytechnic in Kowloon. The index is firming from the 25,000 level. It is still below its trend mean, but it has a sequence of higher reaction lows and higher highs since September. If it can push back above the trend mean, well, then we'll have, I think, more concrete evidence of more than short-term support having been found. When we then think about the China Enterprises Index, there's a high degree of correlation between the two, but I think the fact that the H-share index has been much more range-bound over the course of the last decade is also noteworthy, that it is, but it is steadying also from a psychological number like 10,000 and 25,000 for the Hang Seng. But these indices don't give us a particular view on how investors are looking at Hong Kong, but rather how they are looking at the mainland. And the mainland indices have still been reasonably steady. They are starting to get some traction around the lows put in over the course of the last 6 months. The Shenzhen B shares was up in here today, not in an especially dynamic manner, but at least it is continuing to hold this 900 area. When we then think about what are the banks doing, then They are right in the region of the upper side of the range. This is a very different chart, but of course, it's state-sponsored. And the banking sector has been among the better performing in the mainland Chinese markets over the course of the last few years. It's certainly held on to the advance we saw back in 2014 and 2015. Now, when we look at some of the developed markets in Asia, the Nikkei is pausing here around the upper side of this range over the last couple of years, but I continue to think it's just the first step above the base. This consolidation above the 20,000 level has been really quite steady compared to the kind of volatility that the index has been prone to over the course of the last 25 years. Of course, what happens in terms of the yen is also going to be a major consideration, and it continues to pause here in the region of the trend mean. If the dollar can push through the 110 level, then I think there is clear potential that the Nikkei is going to break on the upside. When we think about the second section index, it is now back above the trend mean. It has encountered at least some resistance around 7,000, but it has broken the downtrend. Now the bigger question is whether it is going to hold this move above the trend mean. If it does that, that will be further evidence that we're back in a demand-dominated environment for the Japanese market. The Taiwanese index continues to push on the upside. It is being led higher by Taiwan Semiconductor. This is the U.S. Listing for that. What we're certainly seeing is on an international basis, that it is the established semiconductor shares are doing better. That is equally true of those that are listed internationally as well as those listed in the USA. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index has been among the best performers. When we look at the kinds of companies that are supplying the machinery to build these or to build the machines that are producing the chips, then Lam Research has been surging on the upside. Applied Materials came through with rather strong earnings and has also popped on the upside to new highs over the course of the last week. These have been incredibly stunning advances. That advanced applied, excuse me, Applied Materials is up 100% this year. When we look at Apple, then we also have evidence of some acceleration, and there's not a great deal of evidence to suggest that this acceleration is over. One of the points that we are starting to see being explored now is the liability that a number of pensions have to negative yields. Dutch yields are still trading at a negative 20 basis points, and they've been in negative territory for the better part of this year already. Now we're right in the region of the trend mean. This is the do or die level. It is either going to push up and back above the 0% level, which would certainly ameliorate some of the very significant underfunding problems that the Dutch pension sector has, or it is going to fail here, and we're going to see an additional rally in Dutch bonds. Then that would have an even more deleterious effect on the ability of these pensions to meet their liabilities. Well, part of the reason why they're not able to meet their liabilities is because of regulation. So the government could move in and simply ease the regulations, and then that would certainly improve the condition. But I do think that this is the thin end of the wedge. We are beginning to see where some of the most egregious activity has occurred within the financial markets as a result of quantitative easing, negative interest rates, the follow-on being negative yields, and now we are also seeing massive fiscal accommodation as well. When we think about where have these pension funds gone in order to pick up yield, then they've moved further out on the risk parameters. One area would be that they have been buying stocks. Well, for example, the Dutch index has pushed on to new high ground. It has been ranging for most of the last couple of years, and it is another one of these European indices that has been able to push on and set new decade highs. It's still a ways off from the peak put in 2000, but I think it is looking increasingly likely that we are seeing a significant breakout here. But what I think is underreported, and we're not going to find out until we do in fact have a major problem, is what kind of alternative assets have pensions been buying? There has been an incredible amount of money poured into private equity and venture capital over the course of the last decade. That has delivered companies like SpaceX, delivered companies like Uber, Grubhub. There's another online pet food company. I think if people just have not learned their lesson. It was Pets.com was one of the biggest problems in, or one of the most high-profile bankruptcies following the TMT bust in the 2000s. Now we're looking at Chewy.com. Now, the bigger question is, where did the money come from to fund these highly speculative ventures, many of which are a long way from turning a profit, and some will never turn a profit. In fact, considering the competition that there is in, for example, home deliveries, in restaurant deliveries, and in transportation, it's probably going to require at least some bankruptcies so that the survivors will be able to take all of the market and then potentially get to a position where they can turn a profit. In fact, that's kind of what happened with Tesla. It was when the Karma car went bankrupt that Tesla was then able to monopolize all of the carbon credits in California. And it was that inflow of revenue was really what allowed the company to prosper. And that was all the way back in 2010. I think there's a clear potential that that's probably what's going to be required in a number of these industries where there are no real paths to profitability as long as they have to share the market with competitors. But the much bigger point is that there has been an awful lot of money from pension funds invested in these alternative assets. And with the number of IPOs that are failing increasing, that then we're starting to see founders of some of these companies taking really significant quantities of cash out of the businesses. Travis Kalanick has already sold over $800 million worth of Uber shares since the lockup expired last week. Then, of course, we have the debacle of WeWork, which didn't even make it to IPO and still had to pay the founder over $1 billion in remuneration just to get rid of him. Well, what we can therefore, I think, clearly state is that the greatest risks that we have right now are in the bond markets, but also in private equity. The kinds of alternative assets that these pension funds have been investing in have been in these venture funds. They've also been in commercial property and in property funds. Those are the two primary kinds of alternative assets that generally tend to get a great deal of interest from yield-hungry investors. Now, when we then think about the banking sector, well, European banks remain saddled with a great deal of debt, and the Eurostox index has broken its downtrend. It is back above the trend mean. It has demonstrated support at the lower side of its range. It has a very similar chart pattern to the 10-year Treasury yield. which has also steadied at the lower side of its range, although yields have been compressing over the course of the last week. When we then think about the US banking sector, the redeeming quality of the US banks is that they are less exposed to the housing market today. They are less exposed to private equity. In fact, its private equity has been able to prosper because of the massive number of rules and regulations that have been imposed upon the banking sector as a result of the financial crisis. In fact, that is probably now keeping them in good stead, that they are less exposed. Of course, it is also tying up their capital, and they do obviously have some challenges, but the index is pushing on the upside, and that is, I think, rather favorable. When we look at the Russell 2000, it continues to hold here around the 1600 point level. What I definitely think, though, is that we are starting to get some evidence of some moderation in consumer activity. Home Depot's downside weekly key is a case in point. And if we get follow through tomorrow, and then that is likely to represent a peak of at least near-term significance and open up the potential for a reversion back towards the mean. Amazon is really just barely steady around the 1700 point level, and it was barely scraped out a positive return in here today, but it was spent most of the day in negative territory. It absolutely needs to sustain a move back above $1,800 in order to confirm that we're back or still in a demand-dominated environment. Personally think that we are in the melt-up stage, that this is exactly the point in the cycle where bubbly activity can be expected to appear. Following an inverted yield curve, it is more than normal to see the stock market appreciate significantly, and that does appear to be now what is underway. There is, but then when we look at the differentiation that we're seeing among the winners and the losers, it is certainly the cyclicals are tending to do better right now, and also the technology sector generally. Well, the fact that the combined market cap of both Microsoft and Apple now exceeds that of the entire consumer staples sector, or the entire Russell 2000, suggests that these mega cap shares are certainly the leaders in terms of performance, but they're also their weighting in the main indices is a significant issue. When we look at the equal weighting S&P 500, and I can't remember the ticker for that. So, SPW, there we go. Then we are also seeing that it is still pretty steady, and it is also breaking on the upside. So while there is obviously going to be some impact when we do get some mean reversion occurring on both Apple and Microsoft, this has been a reasonably broad-based advance, and there is obviously scope here for additional upside. The losers here, though, are going to be those that are not generating the same kind of growth or are not generating the kinds of returns that will be appealing to momentum investors. It's the momentum moves that we're starting to see are really evident in the semiconductor sector. We are starting to see some activity now also appearing in the biotechnology sector, and that has rallied from the lower side of its range, and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. And biotech is a very cyclical sector, and we should certainly anticipate that cyclicals should be doing better. But when we look at some of the retailers, while Macy's was down in a dynamic manner again in here today, and there is clear scope that it is going to break on the downside following a data breach, this kind of news is not exactly coming out at a very favorable time ahead of the primary shopping season of the year. When we look at some of the other companies that are very influenced by the health of the consumer, Etsy, for example, has broken down in a very dynamic manner. eBay is also not doing especially well. There are a couple of reasons why Expedia pulled back so sharply last week, but the more important point is it hasn't rallied yet, and this does look like a completing type 3 top formation. Well, what that is clearly suggesting is that there are clear winners and losers within this stock market advance, then that it is mega caps are leading on the upside. And as long as that remains the case, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. As long as we're seeing these indices continue to push on to new high ground, then momentum is certainly in fashion. There is the scope that we're going to see some mean reversion at some stage, but as long as the region of the trend mean is holding, then these are still uptrends. Now, oil prices were negative in here today. They were down approximately $1.50. That has broken this very short-term sequence of higher reaction lows. If we get follow-through tomorrow on the downside, then it will certainly have confirmed more than short-term resistance in the region of the trend mean. Gold prices have also been reasonably steady over the course of the last few sessions. I think we are still a little early in terms of the potential for a significant rebound in gold. I think we're still in the mean reversion phase, but I'm rather impressed by the steady nature of prices over the last while. And I think we're also back at an interesting juncture for Bitcoin. It has been falling now for most of the last month. It's right back in the region of the lows, around 8,000, and testing the region of the trend mean. If demand is going to be reasserted, well, this is where it needs to happen. A failure at this level would be a clear sign that this consolidation that's been underway for the last 4 or 5 months is in fact more of a medium-term peak than a consolidation. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.